Chapter 7. Ghosts in the Warp. Hellbound. Legacy of Magnus.
"Oh, Largo!" shouted Kaminska. "You're breaking up. I can barely hear you. Keep the fields up and get into our wake."
The Wrathful, with a Firebrade in tow, had entered the infinite that was the warp. Interference from the rolling shadow sea had rendered Vox traffic all but dead as the last vestiges of real space fell away. The final transmissions from the escort ship were fraught with panic and desperation as the Fireblade encountered unknown difficulties during transit. Olago's voice was heavily distorted as he relayed a fragmentary message, the words dissolving into crackling non sequiturs. Strange waves of static flowed through the Wrathful's bridge speakers, the short distance between it and the Fireblade filling up with the impossible geometries of the warp. Entering the warp through a stable route, even guided by a navigator, was dangerous. To do so once that route had collapsed, and without the beacon of the Astronomicon, was nigh on suicidal. Admiral Kaminska swore beneath her breath, smashing her fist against the arm of her command throne in frustration.
"The link is severed," she muttered darkly. "We'll get no further contact with the Fireblade until we leave warp space, Admiral," said Venkmeyer.
Kaminska and her crew were alone on the bridge. Captain Cestus and the other Astartes had convened in one of the vessel's many conference rooms to receive Captain Motep, find out what he knew, and formulate some kind of plan. The mood was subdued because of the warp transit, and the unknown fate of the Fireblade had not alleviated the grim demeanour that pervaded on the bridge. "I know, Helm's Mistress," Kaminska answered with resignation. The Wrathful shuddered. Warning lights flickered up and down the bridge, and in the decks beyond, klaxons sounded.
"We're on full collision drill,"
Helmsmate Kant informed them.
"Good," said the Admiral. "Keep us there."
The whole bridge heaved sideways, scattering navigational instruments and tactical manuals. Kant grabbed the edge of a map table to keep his footing with a sudden warp turbulence.
"At your command,"
he replied. Kaminska sat back in her command throne, exhausted. She had finally come up against a problem she couldn't solve with tactical acumen and audacity. The Astartes captain of the Ultramarines had put her in this situation, and for all her loyalty to the Imperium and the greater glory of mankind, she resented him for it. Lo Thulaga, Vargas, Abrax Van of the Fearless, and now Ulago, all gone. Vorloff of the Boundless had been her friend, and he too had fallen ignominiously in pursuit of an unbeatable foe at the behest of a reckless angel of the Emperor. Now, in the thrall of the warp, and impotent as she was, trusting to her navigator to guide them out safely, Kaminska's anger was only magnified.
"Helmsmate, get me Officer Huntsman of the Watch," she ordered with forced resolve.
"Admiral,"
said Huntsman's voice over the Vox array after a few moments.
"Assemble your best men and have them patrol decks. I don't want any surprises or unforeseen accidents during transit," she replied. "Any signs, any at all? And you know what to do."
"I shall prosecute my duty with due and lethal diligence, Admiral,"
Huntsman responded. Huntsman killed the Voxlink and turned to the three armsmen waiting patiently for him in the upper deck barracks. They were equipped with pistols and shock mauls and light flak jackets. The four men stood in a small group, their features cast with deep shadows from the low-level lighting that persisted whilst the Wrathful was in warp transit. The rest of the barrack room, all gunmetal with stark walls and bunks, was empty.
"Four teams, decks 3 through 18,
said Huntsman with curt and level-headed precision.
"I want regular reports from below decks overseers every half hour."
The three armsmen nodded and left to gather the enforcers. As officer of the watch, it was Huntsman's job to ensure that order and discipline were maintained aboard ship. He was brutal in that duty, an unshakable enforcer who suffered no insubordination. He had killed many men in pursuit of his duty and felt no remorse for it. Warp psychosis could affect any man, and even Huntsman, though possessed of a stronger will than most, felt its presence, even through the shielding of the Geller field surrounding the ship that acted as a barrier against the Imperium. He had seen many suffering from the malady, and it took many forms. Both physical and mental abnormalities could present themselves. Hair loss, babbling, catatonia, even homicidal dementia were common. Huntsman had the cure for each and every one of them sitting snugly in his hip holster. Wiping a hand across his closely cropped hair, Huntsman checked the load in his sidearm and patiently awaited the return of his men. Cestus Antigues and the other Astartes captains sat around a lacquered hexagonal table in one of the Rothful's conference rooms. Wood panelling decorated the room and gave it false warmth, despite its obvious militaristic austerity. Plaques hung on the walls, describing the deeds of the many great commanders, captains and admirals that had served in the Saturnine fleet. Kaminska's was amongst them. Her roll of honour was long and distinguished. There were several artefacts, too. Crossed cutlasses, an antique pistol, and other traditional oceanic trappings. Presiding over all was an icon that spoke of the new age. The imperial eagle was the symbol of the Emperor's War of Unification and a symbol of the union between Mars and Terra. It was a stark reminder of all they were fighting for and the fragility inherent within it.
"As soon as we leave the warp, we get into their wake and launch boarding torpedoes at their blindside. Let the fury of the wolf gut this prey from within," snarled Bryngar.
The wolf guard, unlike the rest of them, was on his feet and had taken to pacing the room.
"They would shoot our torpedoes down before they even breached their shields," countered Motep.
The Thousand Sun had been given the all-clear by Apothecary Liradis after his ship had been destroyed and was keen to attend the council.
"And should they not," he added, before the wolf guard could protest, "we do not know what kind of armour they have or what forces are on board. No, we must be patient and wait until the furious abyss is vulnerable."
The debate as to how to stop the word-bearers had been raging for over an hour. In that time, Motep had revealed what little he knew, the name of the vessel and its admiral, the weapon systems that had crippled his vessel, and the heresy embraced by the word-bearers. He neglected to speak of Zadkiel's offer of alliance, leaving that to his own council. Despite the heated arguments, little had been agreed upon other than that they were committed to their current course of action and that an all-out assault upon the furious abyss was tantamount to suicide.
"Bah! Typical of the sons of Magnus to advise caution in the face of action,"
bellowed the Space Wolf, his feelings for the Thousand Sun as direct and pointed as his demeanour.
"I agree with the wolf," said Skrall. "I cannot abide waiting in the dark. If we are to sacrifice our lives to ensure the destruction of our enemies, then so be it."
"Aye,"
Bryngar agreed, making the most of the support.
"Any other cause smacks of cowardice."
Motep bristled at the slight and looked unshakably into the feral grin that had crept across the Space Wolf's savage features. But he would not be goaded.
"This gets us nowhere," Cestus broke in. "We know for certain that the Astartes aboard that ship have turned traitor. What that means for the rest of the 17th Legion, I do not know. Certainly the Mechanicum built the vessel, and that raises further questions about the nature of its construction. The fact it was kept secret suggests complicity on their part, at least to some degree."
Cestus allowed a moment's pause before he spoke. "Something is deeply wrong. It is my belief that the word-bearers are allied against my legion, and, in so doing, against the Emperor, too. They have supporters in the Mechanicum. How else could such a vessel have been made, yet none of us have known of it?" At that remark, the Astartes were united in a common purpose. What the word-bearers had committed was an outright act of war. But it smacked of something more. Though they had their differences, the sons of the Emperor were all siblings, after a fashion. They would fight and die together against a common enemy. The word-bearers were now just such a foe.
"What then are we to do?"
Bryngar asked at last, his choleric mood abating, even though he cast a baleful glance at the Thousand Sun sitting opposite. Cestus caught the path of the Space Wolf's gaze, but ignored it for the moment.
"We must find a way to disable the ship. Attack it when it is vulnerable," the Ultramarine's captain told them. "For we are at least agreed that our enemy is our brother no longer. They shall be destroyed for this treachery, but not before I find out how deep it goes. The War Master must know of the enemies arrayed against him, so for now we follow the ship and await our opening."
"Still sounds like cowardice to me,"
grumbled Bryngar, taking his seat at last and slouching back in it. Cestus got to his feet quickly, fixing the Space Wolf with a steely gaze.
"Do not dishonour me or your legion further," he warned.
The Wolf Guard matched the Ultramarine's hard stare, but nodded, grumbling his assent beneath his breath. Motep remained silent throughout the exchange, as ever careful to mask his thoughts. Cestus sat back down, regarding the animosity of his brother Astartes sternly. The great crusade had united the legions in common purpose. Many were the times that he had fought alongside both the sons of Rus and Magnus. Yes, the primarchs each had their differences, and this was passed down to their legions, and though they bickered like brothers, they were as one. He could not believe that the foundation of their bonds, and the bonds between all of the legions, were so fragile that by merely putting them in a room together, outright war would be declared. What the word-bearers had done was an aberration. It was the exception, not the rule. The walls of the conference chamber shook violently, interrupting Cestus's thoughts. Bryngar sniffed at the air.
"The stink of the warp is thick," he snarled, with a glance at Motep despite himself.
Another tremor struck the room, threatening to tip the Astartes off their feet. Warning klaxons howled in the corridors beyond and the decks below. Motep gazed into the reflective sheen of the conference table before looking up at Cestus.
"Our passage through the Empyrean has been compromised," he told him.
The Ultramarine returned the Thousand Suns' gaze.
"Antigues!" he said, his eyes still upon Motep. "Accompany me to the bridge."
Cestus turned to address the gathering.
"This isn't over. We reconvene once we have left warp space."
Muttered agreement answered him, and Cestus and Antigues left for the bridge.
"I take it you have come to find out why our transit isn't exactly smooth, my lord,"
said Admiral Kaminska, who was standing next to her command throne. She had been appraising tactical data garnered from the disastrous battle against the enemy ship and was in close conversation with Venkmeyer, her helmsmistress, when Cestus arrived on the bridge. Alongside the strategic display was the sudden fluctuation in the external warp readings.
"Your instincts are correct, Admiral," Cestus replied. Despite their shared experience fighting the Furious Abyss and the obvious validation of his mission, Kaminska's demeanour towards the Ultramarine was still icy. Cestus had hoped it would have thawed slightly in the cauldron of battle, but he had effectively taken her ship, despite her experience and her knowledge. Though Cestus was a fleet commander and his naval tactical acumen was superior to Kaminska's, given that he was an Astartes, he had trampled on her command as if it was nothing. It did not sit well with him, but needs must in the situation they were in. Macragge, maybe more besides, was at stake. Cestus could feel it, and that burden must rest squarely on his shoulders. That meant taking command of the mission. If it also meant that he had to put a vaunted Imperial Admiral's nose out of joint, then so be it. "I am about to visit my chief navigator for an explanation, if you would like to accompany me."
Kaminska's attempt at being cordial was forced as she left the command dais. Both Cestus and Antigues were about to follow when she added,
"The navigator's sanctum is small, Captain. There will only be room for one of you."
Cestus turned to Antigues, who nodded his understanding and took up a ready position at the bridge. In the close confines of the navigator's sanctum, Cestus felt the bulk of his power armour as never before. The tiny isolation chamber above the bridge, where Orcardus and his lesser cohorts dwelt whilst in warp transit, was bereft of the ornamentation ubiquitous in the rest of the ship. Bare walls and grey gunmetal austerity housed a trio of translucent, blister-like pods, in which the navigators achieved communion with the Astronomicon and traversed the capricious ebbs and flows of warp space. Kaminska, who was looking less dignified than usual in the cramped space next to the Astartes, addressed her chief navigator.
"Orcardus!"
There was a moment's pause, and then a hooded and wizened face appeared in the central blister, blurred through the translucent surface. There was the suggestion of wires and circuitry hanging down from some unseen cogitator in the domed ceiling of the pod.
"What has happened?" asked Kaminska.
With a hiss of hydraulics, the central blister broke apart like petals on a rose, and Orcardus emerged through a gaseous cloud of vapour, rising as if from a pit.
"Greetings, Admiral,"
said Orcardus, his voice low and rasping outside of the blister as if he were struggling to speak. The navigator's skin was a sweaty grey, and he wheezed as he breathed.
"When I was preparing to enter the warp and traverse the tertiary coreward transit, as instructed, the Empyrean ocean swirled and split."
"Make your explanations brief, please, Navigator. I am needed at the bridge," Kaminska prompted.
Cestus was gladdened to see that her ire was not reserved for Astartes hijacking her ship. Though much of Orcadus's face was concealed by his hood, Cestus could see a tick of consternation on his lip. All navigators possessed a third eye, and it was this tolerated mutation that allowed them to plot a course through the warp. To look into that eye would drive a normal man insane.
"The tertiary Corvid transit is down," he explained simply. "I had detected a worsening of the abyssal integrity prior to the collapse, but we were already too far engaged in the warp to turn back,"
he said. "How is this possible?" Cestus asked. "How did the enemy collapse the route?" Orcadus's attention fell on the Astartes for the first time during the exchange. If he thought anything of the Ultramarine's presence in his sanctum, he did not show it.
"They deployed some kind of psionic mine,"
Orcadus replied.
"The effect would have been felt by our astropaths. As of now, we are sailing the naked abyss,"
he stated, switching his attention back to Kaminska.
"What are your orders, Admiral?"
Kaminska could not keep the shock from her face. To be effectively cut adrift in the warp was a death sentence, one that she was powerless to do anything about. "We follow the enemy vessel and stay in its wake as best we can," said Cestus, cutting in. "They are bound for Macragge."
"From Segmentum Solar to Ultramar outside stable routes?"
"Yes."
"The chances of success would be minimal, my lord,"
Orcadus warned without emotion. "Even so, that is our course," Cestus told him. Orcadus considered for a moment before replying,
"I can use their vessel as a point of reference, like a beacon, and follow it. But I cannot speak for the warp. If the abyss sees fit to devour us or make us its prey, then the matter is out of my hands."
"Very well, Chief Navigator, you may return to your duties," Cestus told him. Orcadus bowed almost imperceptibly, and just before retreating back to his station said,
"There are things abroad in the Empyrean, the native creatures of the abyss. A shoal of them follows the enemy ship. The warp around it is in tumult, as it has been in the abyss these last several months. It does not bode well."
At that, Orcadus took his leave, swallowed up into the blister once more. Cestus made no remark. In his experiences as a fleet commander, he was all too aware of the creatures that lurked in the warp. He did not know their nature, but he had seen their forms before and knew they were dangerous. He did not doubt that Kaminska knew of them too. With a shared look of understanding, Cestus and Kaminska left the sanctum and headed back down through a subdeck tunnel that led to the bridge. They had been walking for several minutes before the Ultramarine broke the charged silence. "Your attitude towards me and this mission has been noted, Admiral." Kaminska breathed deep as if trying to master her emotions, and then turned. "You took my ship and usurped my command. How would you feel?" she snapped. "You serve the Emperor, Admiral," Cestus told her in a warning tone. "You do well to remember that."
"I am no traitor, Captain Cestus,"
she replied angrily, standing her ground against the massive Astartes, despite his obvious bulk and superior height.
"I am a loyal servant of the Imperium, but you have ridden roughshod over my authority and my ship for a chase into shadows and probable death. I will lay down my life on the altar of victory if I must, but I will not do so meaninglessly and without consideration."
Cestus's face was an unreadable mask as he considered the Admiral's words. "You are right, Admiral. You have shown nothing but courage and honour throughout this endeavour, and I have repaid it with ignorance and scorn. This is not fitting behaviour for a member of the Legion, and I offer my humble apology." Kaminska was taken aback, her expression sketched into a defiant response. At last her face softened, and she exhaled her anger instead.
"Thank you, my lord," she said quietly.
Cestus bowed slowly to acknowledge the Admiral's gratitude.
"I shall meet you on the bridge," said the Astartes, and departed.
When Cestus was gone, Kaminska realized that she was shaking. The vox array crackling into life got her attention.
"Admiral," said Helm's Mistress Venkmai's voice through the conduit wall unit.
"Speak," Kaminska answered after a moment as she mustered her composure.
"We've made contact with the Fireblade."
Aft decks 3 through 6 of the Wrathful were clear. Most of the non-essential crew were locked down in isolation cells for their own protection.
For Huntsman and his small band of three armsmen, it was like patrolling the halls of a ghost ship.
"Squad Barbarous, report."
Huntsman's voice broke the grave-like silence as he strafed a handheld loom lamp back and forth across the corridor. Shadows recoiled from the grainy blade of light, throwing archways and alcoves into sharp relief. Huntsman could feel the tension of his men, drawn up in V formation behind him, as the radio silence from the Voxspeed in the officer's ear persisted.
"Squad Barbarous," he repeated, adjusting his grip on the service pistol outstretched in his hand next to the loom lamp by way of nervous reflex.
Huntsman was about to send two of his armsmen in search of the errant squad when the Vox crackled,
"Squad Barb, report, experiencing all clear."
The clipped reply was fraught with static, but Huntsman was satisfied. The officer of the watch was breathing a sigh of relief when a figure darted across a T-junction ahead, picked out briefly in the light beam.
"Who goes there?" he asked sternly. "Identify yourself at once."
Huntsman moved to the T-junction quickly, but with measured caution, using battle sign to order his armsmen to fan out behind him and cover his flanks. Reaching the end of the corridor, Huntsman looked left, strafing the light beam quickly.
"Sir, I've got him! This way!"
said one of the armsmen, checking down the opposite channel. Huntsman turned, in time to see the same figure disappearing down another corridor. He could swear he was wearing deck crew fatigues, but they weren't the colours for the Wrathful.
"This area is locked down," barked Huntsman, heart racing. "This is your final warning. Make us have known at once."
Silence mocked him.
"Weapons ready,"
Huntsman hissed, and stalked off down the corridor, armsmen in tow. After the disastrous war council in the conference room, Motep had taken his leave of the other Astartes and retired to one of the Wrathful's isolation cells, intending to meditate for the remainder of their transit through the warp. In truth, the confrontation with the Space Wolf had vexed him, more so his loss of control in the face of Bringar's berating, and he sought the solitude of his own company to gather his resolve. Motep reached down to the compartment in his armour that contained the wand stave rescued from the waning moon. Seeing that the item was intact, he muttered an oath to his Primarch. Sitting upon a bench in the cell, the only furnishing in an otherwise Spartan room, Motep regarded the wand stave. In particular, he scrutinized a silvered speculum at the item's tip and stared into its depths. Focusing his thoughts, Motep slipped into a meditative trance as he considered the events unfolding, drawing on the mental acumen for which his legion was famed. An anomalous flicker, something inconsistent and intangible, flashed into existence abruptly and was gone. The Geller field, Motep realized. It was the soft caress of the unfettered warp that he had felt, so brief, so infinitesimal, that only one of Magnus's progeny, one with their own psychic awareness, could have detected it. And something else. Though this, for now at least, slipped beyond Motep's mental grasp, like tendrils of smoke through his fingers. The Thousand Sun broke off the trance at once and returned the wand stave to its compartment in his armour. Donning his helmet, he headed for the Wrathful's primary dock. Captain Ulago sat strapped into his command throne as the warp breached the blast doors at the back of the Fireblade's bridge. All around him was chaos as the hapless crew screamed and thrashed in terror as their minds were unravelled by the warp. Some were already dead, killed by flying debris or simply torn apart as the warp vented its wrath upon them. Ulago's calm in the face of certain disaster, with chunks of metal hull tearing away into nothing as his bridge was disassembled, was unnerving. The entire chamber was cast in an eldritch light, and strange riotous winds buffeted crew and captain alike.
"It goes on. It goes on forever," he said,
his voice caught halfway between wonderment and fear.
"I can see my father and my brothers. I can hear them calling me."
They had entered the Empyrean in the Wrathful's wake in accordance with Admiral Kaminska's orders. But upon the collapse of the tertiary Corward transit, their Geller fields had suffered catastrophic failure, leaving them undefended against the raw emotions of warp space. It had already changed the place. The bridge shimmered with the skies of Io and the canyons of Mimas, the places where Ulago had grown up and trained as a pilot in the Saturnine fleet. The corpses of the navigation crew, slumped over the sextant array, had sprouted into Ganymedean mangrove trees,
twisted roots looping through the steel floor of the bridge that in turn was seething with river grass. Waterfalls, ghosted over reality, shoals of fish leaping through the shattered viewport. Olago wanted very much to be there, back in the places that lived on only in his memory, back when he had been a boy and the universe had felt so infinite and full of wonders. He held out his hands and felt them brush against the reeds that grew by the river Scamandros on Io. Reptilian birds wheeled in a sky that he could somehow see beyond the torn ceiling of the bridge, as if the torn metal and loops of severed cabling were in another dimension and the reality in his head was bleeding through. He stepped forwards. The rest of the crew were dead, but that did not mean anything anymore. They were ghosts, too. The stuff of the warp seethed through the blast doors and caught Ulago up in a swirl of raw emotions. He filled up with regret, then fear, then love, each feeling so powerful that he was just a conduit for them, a hollow man to be buffeted by the warp. The way his father's eyes lit up with pride when he received his first commission, the grief in his mother's eyes, for she knew so many who had lost sons to the void, the fury of space, the ravenous vacuum, the thirsting void that he always knew one day would devour him. In the warp they were ideas made as real as the mountains of Enceladus. The side of the bridge gave way. The air boomed out and flung the corpses of the bridge crew out with it. One of the bodies was not yet dead, and in the back of his mind Ulago recognized that another human being was dying. Then he saw the warp beyond the fireblade. Titanic masses of emotion went on forever, seen not with his eyes but with his mind, rolling incandescent mountains of passion, an ocean of grief, leading down to infinity through caves of misery, dripping with the poison of anger. Hatred was a distant sky, heaving down onto the warp, smothering. Love was a sun. The winds that stripped away the hull of the fireblade were fingers of malice. It was wondrous. Ulago was filled with the sight of it. No, not the sight, but the sheer experience, for the warp was not composed of light, but of emotion, and to experience it was to let it speak to the most fundamental parts of his soul. The sky of hatred split apart, and a yawning mouth opened up above Ulago's soul. Teeth of wrath framed the maw. Beyond it was a black mass, seething like a pit of vermin. It was terror. Mouths were opening up everywhere. Mindless things, like sharks made of malicious glee, slid between the thunderheads of passion. They snarled at the soul specks of the Fireblade's crew, teeth like knives through what remained of their minds. Even love was turning on them, filling them in their last moments of existence with a horrendous longing for all the things they would never have, and appalling, consuming grief for everything they once had but would never see again. The maw bore down on Ulago. Teeth closed in on him, an appalling coldness sheared through him, and he knew that it was the purity of death. The boiling mass seethed. The last vestiges of his physical self recoiled as worms forced themselves into a nose and mouth that no longer existed. The warp turned dark, and Ulago drowned in fear. Admiral Kaminska reached the bridge to find an ashen-faced crew before her. Cestus had just arrived, his countenance stern and pensive, as the distress signal emanating from the Fireblade repeated on the ship-to-ship vox.
This, Ulago, Fireblade, damaged in transit, request dock, repairs.
Impossible, said Kaminska, feeling all colour drain from her face as she heard the voice of a man she thought was dead.
Vox traffic is rendered null whilst in warp transit.
Admiral, the Fireblade claims to be a beam to our port side, offered Helm's mate Kant as he monitored further communications.
Kaminska looked instinctively over to the viewport, and despite the shimmering interference caused by the Geller field, she could see Olago's ship, a little battered by the initial sortie against the furious abyss, but otherwise fine. Common sense warred with the emotions of her heart. Ulago was a comrade in arms. Kaminska had fought him lost, and now she had an opportunity to save him.
Guide them in to make dock at once.
Huntsman had chased the elusive figure to a dead end in the complex of corridors aboard aft deck 3 of the Rothful. Doors punctuated the apparently endless passageways that led into more barrack rooms and occasionally isolation cells. As he approached slowly, drawing the loom lamp across the figure's body, he noticed that his quarry faced the wall. He also saw the fatigues it was wearing more clearly. It was the deck uniform of the Fireblade.
"Halt!" he ordered the figure sternly, with a quick glance behind him to ensure that his armsmen were still in support.
From the back, he judged the figure to be male, but a scraggly wretch, to be sure, with unkempt hair like wire and a stench that suggested he hadn't washed in many days. Huntsman activated the Voxbead.
"Bridge, this is Officer Huntsman. I have detained a male deck crew in Arf 3," he said. "He appears to be wearing a Fireblade uniform."
Helms Mate Kant's response came through crackling static.
"Repeat. Did you say the Fireblade?"
"Affirmative. A deckhand from the Fireblade,"
Huntsman replied, edging closer.
"That's impossible. The Fireblade has only just docked with us."
Huntsman felt a cold chill run down his marrow as the figure turned. Somehow, the light from the loom lamp wasn't able to illuminate a belt of shadow across the top of the figure's head and eyes, but Huntsman saw its mouth well enough. The deckhand made a wide, gash-like smile with rotten lips caked in dry blood.
"In the name of terror,"
Huntsman breathed, as the figure's jaw distended impossibly wide and revealed dozens of needle-like teeth. Fingers lengthened into talons, nails drenched in blood and razor sharp. Eyes flashed red in the darkness like orbs of hate. Huntsman fired. On the bridge, rending screams and scattered gunfire emitted from the Vox, followed by an almighty static discharge that ended in total silence.
"Raise the officer of the watch at once," Kaminska ordered.
Kant worked at the array but looked up after a few minutes.
"There is no response, Admiral."
Kaminska snarled, hammered an icon on a command throne, and opened another channel.
"Primary dock, respond. This is Admiral Kaminska. Disengage from the Fireblade at once," she said, shouting the orders.
Nothing. Communications were dead. A warning klaxon sounded on the bridge. Seconds later, the Wrathful shook with external hull detonations.
"Admiral," cried Helms Mistress Venkmeyer, "I'm reading armor damage to the port side, upper decks. How is that even possible?"
"The Fireblade is firing its dorsal turrets," she answered grimly. "It seems Olago's ship survived after all," said Cestus, donning his battle helm, Antigis following his lead. "Only not in the way we had hoped." "All Astartes," he barked into his helmet vox, mercifully unaffected by the radio blackout, "convene on Arf 3 primary dock immediately."
A long, low scream, keen through the Wrathful, vibrating through the hull, then another and another, until a chorus of them was shrieking through the ship. It sounded like the death screams of hundreds of terrified men. Motep lowered his smoking bolt gun once he had dispatched the creature back to the ether. He had arrived too late to save the officer of the watch and his armsmen who lay eviscerated on the floor and partway up the blood-slicked walls. The thing had been warp-spawn. That much was apparent, wearing a shadow form of one of the Fireblade's crew rather than inhabiting a body directly. The momentary breach in the Wrathful's Geller field had allowed it aboard ship. Motep's instincts told him that it was just a harbinger, and he headed off quickly to the primary dock. Crewmen were hurrying down the Wrathful's corridors, and they struggled to get past the bulky armored Astartes as he fought to gain the primary dock. The engine section started just sternwards of the shuttle decks, and the ship was getting up to full evasion power. Shouldering past the frantic crew, Motep saw another figure impeding his progress, but one of flesh and blood, standing rock-like in grey power armour.
"Bryngar," said the Thousand Sun, levelly at the Space Wolf who had just emerged from an adjacent corridor.
The World-Eater Skrull, with two of his Legion brothers, appeared suddenly alongside him from the opposite corridor. Standing at the intersection of the crossroads, a strange sense of impasse existed for a moment before the wolf guard snarled and turned away, heading for the primary dock. The five Astartes emerged into chaos. Men and women of the Wrathful fled in all directions, screaming and shouting. Some brandished weapons, others sought higher ground, only to be torn down and butchered. Blood swilled like a slick on the dock as the attendant deck crews of the Wrathful were torn apart by fell apparitions dressed in the garb of the Fireblade. The crew of the lost escort ship had changed. Their mouths were long and wide, as if fixed in a perpetual sadistic grin. Needle-like fangs filled their distended maws like those of the long-extinct Terran shark, while long, barbed fingers curled like claws, tearing at skin, flesh, and bone. They fell upon the human deck crews with reckless abandon and were devouring them, the bloodied, rotten faces of the gruesome predators alive with glee.
"In the name of Russ!"
Bryngar breathed as he saw the docking ports that joined the two ships disgorge numberless hordes of twisted Fireblade crew.
"They are warp spawn," Motep told them, drawing his scimitar, "wearing the bodies of our allies, whose souls are now hellbound, lost to the Empyrean. Destroy them!"
Bryngar threw his head back and roared, the sound eerie and resonant from within the confines of his battle helm. With Felltooth in one hand and bolt pistol in the other, he charged into the fray. Skrall and the World Eaters followed, brandishing chain axes and bellowing the name of Angron. A trio of vampire-like warpspawn fell under the withering report of Motep's bolter as he trudged across the primary dock and through the visceral mire sloshing at his feet. The copper stink assailing his nostrils would have overpowered a normal man, but the Thousand Sun crushed the sensation and closed with the enemy. Barks of bolter fire were tinny and echoing through his helmet as he cut down an advancing warpspawn, parting its sternum and decapitating it with a return swing. The hordes were everywhere and soon surrounded him. The muzzle flare from his weapon illuminated the grim destruction he wrought with flashing intermittence, the keening wail of his scimitar a high-pitched chorus to the din of explosive fire. He felt something trying to push at the edges of his mind, testing his psychic defences with tentative mental probing. Slogging through the despicable horde, he was drawn closer to the source of it, even as it was drawn to him, and he felt the pressure on his sanity increase. Bryngar shrugged off a creature clinging to his arm and smashed it with Felltooth, the rune axe cutting through wasted bone like air. He thrust his bolt pistol into another and used the warp spawn's momentum to lift it from the ground. Triggering the weapon, he blasted the creature apart in a shower of bone and viscera. Then the space wolf lunged and butted a third, almost dissolving its rotted cranium against his battle helm. Gore and brain matter spoiled his vision, and Bryngar wiped his helmet visor clean with the back of his gauntleted hand. With the destruction of the physical body, the warp spawn appeared to lose their hold on the material plane and dissipated. They were easy meat. Bryngar had fought far hardier foes, but in such swarms they were starting to tax him. Even his gene-enhanced musculature burned after the solid fighting. For every three the Wolfguard slew, another six took their place, pouring like rancid ants from the docking portals. Bryngar realized to his dismay, hacking down another spawn, that gradually he was being pushed back. He caught sight of Skrall through the melee. The World-Eater was similarly pressed, though a bloody mist surrounded him from the churning punishment wreaked by his chain axe. He could not see Skrall's fellow legionaries. Bryngar assumed that they'd been swallowed by the horde. A sudden tearing of metal, mangled with the sound of tortured souls, rent the air, and Bryngar felt the deck lurch from under him as it seemed to twist in on itself. The integrity fields which kept the dock pressurized when the dock ports were open flickered once, but held. The physical structure did not. A huge chunk ripped out of the deck as if bitten by unseen jaws, three decks high. Debris was tumbling out into the ether. Bryngar looked away, for to do otherwise would be to comprehend the naked warp and embrace madness. Something stirred beyond the breach, out in the infinite. Bryngar felt it as the hackles rose on the back of his neck, and the feral nature of his legion became suddenly emboldened. For a brief moment, the space wolf wanted to tear off his helmet and gauntlets and gorge himself on the flesh like a beast of the wild. He backed away of his own volition, realizing that something primal and terrible was with them on the dock. Motep had forced his way to the docking portals through a swathe of warpspawn. His armor was dented and scratched from their ether claws, and his body heaved with exhaustion. It was not physical prowess that would save them here, but the discipline of a mind that needed to hold fast. Motep had felt the presence too, and standing before the docking portal, he beheld in it his mind's eye. It was dark and seething, a pure predator.
"It has seen me,"
he said calmly into his helmet vox, the warp-spawn hordes recoiling suddenly from the thousand sun, regarding him in the same way a proserpine spire-hawk regards its prey.
I cannot hide from it now.
Bryngar was almost back with Skral, the two Astartes having been fought back to the blast doors, when he heard Motep through his vox.
Seen what?
Snarled the Space Wolf, gutting another warp-spawn as Skral cleaved the arm from another.
You cannot prevail here, the voice of Motep came again. Get out and seal the doors. I will remain and activate the dock's auto-destruct sequence.
Many vessels of the Imperial fleet came with such precautionary measures built into their design by the Mechanicum. They were meant as weapons of last resort, should a ship be overrun and in danger of capture. If a ship could not be defended or retaken from an enemy, then it would be denied to them utterly, although in this case Motep's sacrifice would not destroy the ship, only vanquish the foes that were besieging it.
"Do so, now," urged the Thousand Sun.
Bryngar had lost sight of him, though his view was curtailed as he forced himself to look away from the tear into the naked warp beyond. Although it rankled, the Space Wolf knew he was chasing a lost cause.
"Come on,"
he snarled to Skral, who hacked and hewed with berserk fury.
"We are leaving." "The sons of Angron do not flee the enemy,"
he raged in response.
"Even so,"
Bryngar said, smashing a warp spawn aside. Ducking a blood-maddened sweep of Skral's chain axe, he punched the world-eater hard in the chest with the flat of his hand. The stunned Astartes was lifted off his feet and sent sprawling through the open blast doors. Bryngar trudged after Skral's prone form, carving a path through the horde with Felltooth. A few of the warp-spawn had found their way through to the other side of the blast doors that led from the primary dock. Bryngar was about to hunt them down when a barrage of bolter fire scythed through them like wheat. Inside his battle helm, the Space Wolf grinned as he saw the battered forms of the Ultramarines.
"Down!"
cried Cestus, who was leading the group, and Bryngar hit the deck as a fusillade of fire erupted overhead. Arching his neck, the Space Wolf saw the smoking bodies of more warpspawn fall into a heap at the dock threshold. Swinging out a hand, he thumped the portal icon, and the blast door slid shut with a hydraulic pressure hiss.
"We must seal the doors,"
he snarled, rolling on his back, as Antigis, Mora, and Lexinal charged past him to guard the portal. Stripping away the verisimilitude of the warpspawn crew, Motep saw that they were not separate entities at all. They were the extension of a single, conjoined, conscious, raw emotion given form. Tentacles snaked from three gaping maws lined with cruel teeth that had once been the docking portals, and flesh sacks like finger puppets danced along them. As he stepped forward, he brandished his scimitar, a power sword engraved with hieroglyphics, the old tongue of Prospero. Motep was acutely aware of the blast doors shutting behind him, though the sound was far off, as if listened to in a separate dimension from the one he currently inhabited. Realizing he was alone, the Thousand Sun tapped into the innate power of his legion, the psychic mutation common to all sons and daughters of Prospero that had earned Magnus the condemnation of Nykaea. Motep's power, like that of all the Astartes of his legion, was honed to a rapier-like point, and when properly channeled, could be deadly. The naysayers of Nykaea had been right to fear it. Motep stowed his bolter, for it would not avail him here, and drew forth the wand stave. Inputting a rune sequence played out in the jewels along its short haft, the item extended into the length of a staff. Holding the weapon up to his helmet lens, Motep peered through the speculum at the tip. The tiny, silvered mirror became transparent, and through it, the Thousand Sun saw the entity for what it was. The warp had been cruel. It had taken the ship and its crew and transfigured it into something wretched and debased. Tiny black eyes rolled in the armoured carapace, and the bodies of its crew writhed all over the surface of the ship, trapped within a translucent membrane that sheathed it like living tissue. They were deformed, fused together with their tortured expressions, stretched out as if melted. These were the souls of the Fireblade's crew, and they were lost to the warp forever. The portion of the escort ship that had penetrated the cargo hold eked from the belly of the ship like an umbilical cord, the tentacle strings spilling from the maws at the end of them revealed to be tongues. The sound that emanated from them was appalling. The warp screamed from the Fireblade's throat, a screeching gale that threatened to knock Motep off his feet. He stayed upright, however, and found what he was looking for in the partly insubstantial hull of the former Imperial ship. The Thousand Sun intoned words of power, and an ellipsis of light burned into the deck plate. The Prosperine hieroglyphics on his staff flared bright vermilion. Spinning the staff around, Motep drove the scimitar into it pummel first, and it became a spear.
"Back to the deeps!"
bellowed the son of Magnus, his aim fixed upon the warp entity's tainted core.
"There will be no feasting here for you, dead thing. By the silver towers and the ever-burning eye, begone!"
Motep flung the spear just as the tentacles closed on him, a burning trail of crimson light following its psychic trajectory. It struck the Fireblade in the heart of its central maw, and a great explosion of light detonated within. Spectral blood fountained, and the reaching tentacles withered and burned. The illumination built, blazing out of the maw, and Motep was forced to look away from its brilliance. The scent of acrid smoke filled his nostrils, penetrating his helmet filters, and raging flames engulfed his senses, together with a primordial scream of something dying in the fathomless ether. In the corridor beyond the primary dock, ceiling plates fell like rain as the walls of the Wrathful shuddered with fury. Cestus and Antigues fought to get to the doors as the tremors hit. The rippling shockwaves were coming from the primary dock. Staying on his feet, Cestus drew his power sword and was about to beckon forward a group of engineers who were lingering behind them to fuse the blast doors, when the horrific din emanating from within stopped. Smoke and faint white light issued through the cracks. All was quiet and still for a moment.
"Where is Motep?"
the ultramarine asked, sheathing the blade. He'd been monitoring the helmet vox transmissions and knew that the Thousand Sun had been at the primary dock. During the warp phenomenon, battles had erupted all across the Wrathful, and the secondary and tertiary docks had also come under attack. Reports were flickering past on Cestus's helmet vox that the warp spawn had abated abruptly for reasons unknown, dissolving back into the ether. Skral was still out of it on the deck, babbling in enraged delirium, so Cestus turned to Bryngar for his answer.
"We made a noble sacrifice," intoned the Space Wolf as he got to his feet.
"That almost sounds like respect," Cestus said, his voice tinged with bitterness.
"It is," growled Bryngar. "He gave his life for this ship, and in so doing saved us all. For that he will have the eternal gratitude of Russ. I am not so proud to admit that I misjudged him."
Whining servos and the hiss of released pressure made the Space Wolf turn with bolt pistol raised as the blast doors ground open. Cestus and the other Astartes joined him with weapons levelled at the flickering dark beyond. Motep emerged from the scorched ruin of the primary dock, staggering, but very much alive. Tendrils of smoke rose from his pitted armour, and he was drenched in viscous, translucent gore. In spite of his appearance and obvious injuries, he still retained his bearing, that nobility and arrogance so typical of Prospero's sons.
"It is not possible,"
Bryngar breathed, taking a step back, as if Motep were some apparition from the fireside sages of Fenris.
"None could have survived in such a conflagration."
Cestus lowered his bolter cautiously, and then his hand, in a gesture for the other ultramarines to do the same.
"We thought you were dead."
Motep unclasped and removed his helmet, breathing deep of the recycled air. His eyes were black orbs, and a riot of purple veins wreathed his face, but was slowly disappearing beneath his skin.
"As did I,"
gasped the Thousand Sun, helmet clattering to the deck as it fell from nerveless fingers. Cestus caught his fellow Astartes as he lurched forward and bore him down to the floor, half cradled in his arms.
"Summon Liradis at once," he told Antigues, who was stunned for a moment before he came to his senses and went off to find the ultramarine apothecary. "He lives yet," Cestus added, noting Motep's fevered breathing.
"Aye," Bryngar muttered darkly, having overcome his superstition. "And there is but one way that could be so."
The Space Wolf's lip curled up in profound distaste.
"Sorcery,"